This is the moment they have been waiting for. Belmont, as an at-large team, they didn't expect to be here. They're not just in the NCAA tournament, however. They are moving on. Prairie View calls off the dogs, back into the hands of Edge. He tosses the ball high in the air, and Fairleigh Dickinson has its breakthrough moment as a program. For the first time ever, the Knights are victorious in the NCAA tournament.
The play-in games, as I call them, NCAA tournament doesn't say that. They say the first four, which I'm like, for the first four, there's eight teams that are playing. Okay, first four games, I guess is what they mean. Anyway.
What's funny about it is Kevin Harlan said play-in game one time last night.
Did he?
I wonder what the NCAA thinks about him saying that.
I'm guessing somebody let him know not to say that again. So Belmont wins over Temple. I think a lot of people thought that would happen, 81-70. And Fairleigh Dickinson, after being down 13 second half, came back to beat Prairie View A&M 82-76. Belmont gets Maryland, which I think is a favorable matchup in the next round, the first round of the tournament, in my opinion. And Fairleigh Dickinson gets Gonzaga. So unless they're going to be the next UMBC, that's not the greatest thing. But, hey, you at least won a game, and you can say you won a tournament game, although I think there should be an asterisk next to that when you're a 16 and beating another 16. But it is what it is. Belmont, to me, is more legit. You beat a 11. You're 11. I'm cool with that. So I still think that the way this should be, and I guess they may have done that with Belmont and Temple, but I think the 16 shouldn't have to play each other. The way I look at it is the last eight teams in the pecking order to make the tournament. I don't care if they're majors, all mid-majors, doesn't matter. The last eight that get in, then those are one plays eight. It's like a mini tournament to get into the field of 64. Because, I mean, Prairie View A&M, hey, congrats, you made it to the tournament, you found out Sunday, and less than 48 hours later, you're done.
Yeah.
You won your tournament, you earned a spot. I think if you get the automatic bid, you shouldn't have to be in a first four game, in my opinion.
That stands out for me is that you earned your spot into the tournament.
Yeah.
These teams were selected at large.
Right.
The other ones.
Yeah, if you're at large.
The Belmonts and the Temples of the world
did
not win their tournament.
Right.
Because if you win your tournament and you're in those conferences, you're probably going to be higher than a 16.
Right.
So, yeah, that's where I have kind of the beef with it is that what's the whole point of me winning my conference tournament? There's just so many things that are awkward to me about the whole
thing. Ohio State should have to be in one of these
games,
in my
opinion.
Ohio State should be. I'm trying to see who else that was an at-large. Well, Arizona State, St. John's play tonight. I don't know. Florida?
Just got to find three more teams. Yeah, Florida would probably be one.
Yeah. Because you can't go Liberty. They're at 12, but they won their conference tournament.
Yeah.
You can't go New Mexico State. They won their conference tournament. So, yeah, to me, that Georgia State won the conference tournament. You don't pick them. Seton Hall, there'd be one. I mean, those would be more interesting games, wouldn't it? If Seton Hall played Florida to into the round of 64 instead of Fairleigh Dickinson versus Prairie View A&M.
Yeah.
I don't like how they do it.
But that's the whole, you know, we get treated better because we're in a Power 5 conference.
That's exactly right.
Is what it is.
That's exactly right. So
and you notice that a lot of those 11 seeds aren't necessarily the Power 5 teams either. That
no,
barely
sometimes
get into the
they tournament. Are. Tonight
they are. K-State and Wake Forest were, and tonight they are.
To the Arizona State, St. John's. I mean, not Power 6 now, some people are saying with the Big East, which is fine. But, yeah, that's the game you want to really watch, Arizona State, St. John's. Belmont Temple's fine. A 16 versus 16, I never watch that game.
I might watch the end of it if it's close to see who's going to win.
I don't tune in when it tips off.
I watched a lot of I actually, in fact, had my DVR and was pausing and watched the entire Belmont game.
Yeah,
but I watched the last 2 minutes of the Fairleigh Dickinson Prairie View game.
Okay, so those are the first two winners of the tournament. Gets underway, in my opinion, really tomorrow, and that'll be around 11 a.m. Get your brackets into us. You can fax them 545-3191, or you can go ahead and scan them and email them to us kdnskzdy@nckcn.com to see if you can win some of our prizes that we'll be giving away with our bracket contest. All right, lots of things to get to here, and probably the biggest thing regionally is the status of Dean Wade. Is he going to play? Is he not going to play? Bruce Weber addressed that last night.
He's made some progress, but I would say he's doubtful. Yeah, it's still, we can't put him in jeopardy. And he'd love to play. It's not him at all, but He just, the injury was more severe than we ever anticipated, and it's going to take a little time.
Okay, so lots of things to dissect there, and we'll talk with Brian Smoller about it a little bit coming up here at the bottom of the hour. Did Kansas State risk him in the Oklahoma game? What did Kansas State know about his foot injury? Because he hurt it in the first half against Oklahoma, is what Bruce Weber said.
Yeah.
He played through the injury second half against Oklahoma, and then he really wasn't that bad after the game, and the very next day is when it started hurting, and he went and had it checked out. They've known he's had a foot problem throughout the year. They've shut it down for a while. It's been off and on, and they had a chance to win the Big 12 championship, get a share with a win over Oklahoma, which they had the win to get the share. And there are people that wonder, and I think it's a fair question, did Kansas State risk Dean Wade for the NCAA tournament to get a Big 12 championship trophy to hoist above their heads on senior night? I mean, you've known he's had issues with his foot throughout the year. What is more important to you? And I think some people think that Kansas State chose the Big 12 championship over making a run NCAA tournament. I'm not saying I believe that, but there is that scuttlebutt on social media that I think is fair to at least present. Because there were talk about, well, you know, you're up 10. Why did Dean even play in the second half? Well, 10 is not a comfortable lead, per se. That could easily evaporate.
Oh, yeah.
See the NBA last night where the Kings had a 25-point lead in the fourth quarter last night and lost at home.
Yeah.
So 10 points is not safe. But it does. You do wonder, what did K-State know about his foot? To where he played there in the second half. And did Dean Wade just not tell anybody anything about it and gutted through it? And then he should have maybe said something. And if they could have caught it sooner, maybe he'd still be able to play in the tournament. And Dean was like, listen, I'm a senior. It's a senior night. I'm going to play in this game no matter what. I'm not going to tell anybody about it. And I'm going to play through it. And I want to win a Big 12 championship. And maybe Dean Wade kind of sabotaged his NCAA tournament run because that was a special night. His last game at Bramlage. And then he maybe thought it wasn't going to be as bad as it turned out to be. But when he's in a boot and on crutches, I mean, he isn't going to play this week.
Yeah.
And I do still think they say doubtful. They don't say out. They say doubtful. So is there a chance that they get through this weekend? He plays some next week. There might be that 8-minute action that he had last year against Kentucky. But those are fair questions to ask, because Kansas State's not going to come out and tell the public, well, we knew he had that foot. It was we were kind of debating whether or not he should play against Oklahoma, but we talked with Dean and we decided it's worth it. We want to win the Big 12 championship. They're not going to come out and say that.
No.
Even if that's exactly what happened.
Yeah. And you know, you just don't know what side of which side was the one that said, yeah, you're playing, or yes, I'm playing.
Well, if you lived up to Dean Wade, as you just heard from Dean Bruce Weber, he would play in the NCAA tournament, which I don't blame him. You'd want him to. And this is unfair because now there are K-State fans questioning Dean Wade's toughness, which I'm going to say right now. If you have a foot injury in basketball, that's like driving a car with a flat tire.
Yeah.
It's not good on the car if you keep driving that on the flat tire for very long, is it?
No. Yeah, and I don't know if it was K-State's decision or Dean Wade's decision to keep playing in that Oklahoma game in the second half.
I'm guessing
it was
Dean
Wade's
decision.
But I can tell you right now that if I'm Dean Wade and the injury gets re-aggravated, let's say, because obviously he's going to play until something happens, you know.
Right.
But something did happen in the first half, apparently. But I've been there before, like not as bad as an injury as Dean Wade had, but I had a pretty serious ankle sprain in a game that I was playing. In high school, and well, you know, you let that adrenaline and fuel run through you. You can still run. Like the only thing that hurt me was when I got done with the game and got in the shower.
Sure.
And I got out of the shower and I could barely walk that night because the pain was so bad. So those are the things that, you know, he can fight through that. So maybe he doesn't know the extent of how bad it really is, and he's the one that decided I'm going to stay in. Mm-hmm. So then. The hindsight 2020 thing starts coming up. You know, did they make the right decision? Did they, you know, sacrifice a chance at a big tournament run for a Big 12 championship?
Mm-hmm.
You know, those are the things that start coming in. I would venture to guess that it was probably Dean Wade saying, I feel okay. I can still play.
And I've had to miss enough games in my career.
Exactly.
And now we have a chance to win a Big 12 title. I'm not letting
him.
And it's senior day.
Exactly.
It's his last home game. Might have been different if he'd been a sophomore or junior.
Yeah.
Maybe he wouldn't have chanced it. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's unfortunate. That's the bad thing about it, because he's
a
great kid.
2 years in a row now. But...
great family, and then NCAA tournament's a chance to showcase your ability on a national stage, and he won't be able to do that. It doesn't sound like, according to Bruce Weber. He's doubtful, not ruled out, doubtful. We'll talk more with Brian Smoller about that. All right, we've got some news when it comes to Major League Baseball. There's an opener in Japan today. Did you know that?
Yeah, I knew it was coming up. I didn't know it was
March 20th.
When it was.
I haven't been able to follow things too closely on baseball. I've been stuck on basketball, which is fine. And then the offseason football news has been pretty interesting as well. But the Royals have made some decisions, and none of these decisions are surprising at all. Ian Kennedy is going to go to the bullpen. And that's what Les Norman predicted on our show in the offseason, that you've probably heard on some promos as well. So Ian Kennedy's going to be in the bullpen, which I think is a good place for him. He hasn't appeared out of the pen since 2009. He's in the fourth year of a five-year, $70 million contract. So he's been injury-prone the last couple of years. His fastball can get up to 95 miles an hour. He has good breaking ball stuff. He reminds me of Wade Davis, except Wade had more of a power arm. Mm-hmm. He's got a breaking ball that's just as good as Wade Davis's. But Wade Davis had a 97, 98 mile an hour heater, or 99 at times. Now he doesn't have that as much. But Kennedy is going to be in the bullpen, which I think makes sense. Then the right field position for the Royals, it was between Brett Phillips, Jorge Bonifacio, Jorge Soler, and Brian Goodwin. And the Royals have narrowed it down as Brett Phillips, who was picked up in the Moustakas trade with the Brewers last year. Great defensive player, but he struggles with the bat. And Jorge Bonifacio, they still have options, and we figured they would probably go down, and they are. They're going to go to the minors because they have options. Brian Goodwin doesn't have options. Jorge Soler, they said he's going to play every day. It's just a matter of will he play right field or DH. I would guess he's going to rotate that role with Goodwin, I would imagine. And then Whit Merrifield could see some time in right field. You also got Chris Owings they picked up to play some outfield or play DH. So all of this that the Royals are doing from that standpoint makes sense. And, of course, they got Martin Maldonado as their catcher now, if you didn't know about that about a week and a half ago. Picked him up, and he threw out Terrence Gore trying to steal the other day. So, and he's a guy that got a gold glove just a couple years ago. So defensively, the Royals don't lose anything, really, honestly. With Salvi out, they don't lose anything defensively. Offensively, they do. They lose a lot of pop, 25 homers, 80 RBIs. And they're going to have to replace that. So the Royals making some moves as they are 8 days away from opening day. Can you believe that? March 28th, they open a home against, I forgot who they open. Is it against the White Sox? Seems like it's always the White Sox.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's the White Sox.
And it's at Kauffman Stadium. Of course, our Royals bus trip will be April 28th on a Sunday. If you'd like to go, give us a call, 545-3220. The big news in baseball yesterday is Mike Trout. Mike Trout is going to get... it's kind of confusing, but they're tacking on 10 years to the existing 2 years left on his contract. So, in essence, it's a $430 million deal. The last 10 years of this contract, he will get $36 million every year. There is no opt-out, so he can't opt out after a few years, which is interesting. This makes him the highest-paid baseball player in Major League Baseball history. $430 million, counting everything, $36 million per year last 10 years. And this is really interesting. A lot of people that hear this are going to say, oh, my God, that's just ridiculous. According to Ben Lindbergh of Ringer.com, Mike Trout isn't worth $430 million. So when you start to read that, you're like, well, of course he's not. He goes on to say he's worth much more. He's worth much more than $430 million. He's going to get this $430 million over the 12 years. Doesn't include an opt-out. Ties Trout to the Angels through his 39th birthday. He's due $66.5 million for the next 2 years under an extension he signed back in 2014, so forth and so on. But according to this, they look at all the numbers and everything Mike Trout does. He will retire with more than $500 million in career earnings, so half of a billion. Although, if he gets another contract, you know, at the end of his, if he's playing great at 38, who knows what else he can make. But this guy's contention, and he makes a pretty good point. He says if Mike Trout were a free agent today, the bidding would begin at $500 million. And even $600 million would make sense on paper based on the numbers and what he's put together. He says in his article that Mike Trout is Machado and Harper combined. And they've combined for $600 million in their deals this summer. And you know what? I can't disagree with that.
No.
Mike Trout is a better player than Harper. He's a much better player than Machado. He works his tail off. He's in great physical condition. He's a fantastic. He's a five-tool player. He's probably the best player in baseball. Some people may not know that because Angels have struggled the last couple of years. But this is a guy that plays unbelievable defense, has fantastic speed, although they've shut that down a little bit. He has power. Yeah, he does strike out. So do a lot of people. Here's his teammate, Cole Calhoun, talking about Mike Trout's $430 million contract.
They've made Mike Trout an angel for life, you know. And, you know, knowing him, they might have to sign him to an extension after this, too, because he'll still figure out how to put up numbers. So I think it's great for the fan base. And, you know, there was kind of that 2 years from now, something kind of looming overhead, and they've kind of taken care of that.
Cole Calhoun, teammate of Mike Trout with the Angels. Listen, Angels are a big market team in L.A. If the Royals had Mike Trout, they would never be able to do this and keep him. The Angels, big market team, can. They did the right thing from the standpoint that they're talking about he could be traded in a couple years and this and that Angel fans freaking out. You have a guy of this talent, you need to find every way to keep him. Just like the Chiefs are going to have to pony up and keep Patrick Mahomes. They're going to have to pay, you know, the Chiefs might have to pay $35 to $40 million a year to keep Patrick Mahomes, which I think they will, as long as he stays healthy. So when you've got a franchise or once-in-a-generation talent, you typically need to hold on to them, especially when they're in the prime of their career. It's different if they're at age 30 or 32 or 34. But when you're in the prime of your career, that makes more sense. Remember, Trout was young when he came into the league.
Like
so,
when the Angels gave Pujols a 10-year deal.
Yeah, that was a little bit different. Absolutely. Josh Hamilton, another bad deal by the Angels. Can this blow up in the Angels' face? Absolutely. I mean, Trout gets hurt tomorrow. It blows up. You take a risk. But he's in tremendous shape, works hard at his craft. And, you know, I mean, if you're a big market team and you have the money, why wouldn't you keep a generational talent like that? He's going to be a Hall of Famer if he keeps putting up the numbers he has.
Oh, without question.
So the Angels back up the Brinks truck for Mike Trout. Okay, NBA news to pass along to you. Kind of interesting. Russell Westbrook was suspended for the Heat game on Monday night because he picked up his 16th technical foul in a game before that against the Warriors. Here's my question. In the NBA, you play 82 games. If you're healthy, you play 82 games. So 16 technical fouls, 16 divided into 82 is almost 20% of the games. Okay? So here's my question and my contention. If you're getting 16 technical fouls, you should be suspended for more than one game. Here's my point.
I agree.
Here's my thing. If it takes... Why 16? How did that... What an arbitrary number. Hey, when you get your 16th, your 15th, you're okay. Your 16th technical foul accumulated during the season, that's too much. You're suspended for a game. It should be, in my opinion, 5. You get 5 technicals, you're out of game. You get to 10, you're out another game. You get to 15, you're out another game. You get to 20, you're out 2 games. Because this is stupid to me. The players need to shut up. All right, I am so sick of NBA players getting paid tons of money that just whine about every call. Westbrook is one of them, and he's not the only one. LeBron does it too. The best of the best do it. You know, Jordan cried to officials too. Just shut up and play basketball. All right, the refs have a hard enough time, and they're getting paid decent money, but nothing close to what Russell Westbrook, James Harden, LeBron James are getting paid. Not even close. So here's the thing. This is where the league needs to step up, in my opinion, and say, listen, if you can't go... Listen, 16 technical fouls in 82 games means that you can get a technical foul every fifth game and you will only be suspended for one game the whole year. That's baloney. You should be able to go at least 8 games without a technical. Okay? So if you get 10 technicals, that's one every 8 games. You can't avoid a technical 7 out of 8 games. I mean, come on, just shut up.
Yeah.
So to me, I would say your 10th technical foul, at least, we should be invoking a suspension.
Oh, yeah.
You get all the way to 16, then they rescind some of these. Well, this time they didn't. And Russell actually got 2 other technicals that were rescinded after the fact by the league. But you get the 16 technicals. Rasheed Wallace was one of the worst of all time, of course, with all
the
technical fouls.
That's kind of, I think, where those rules kind of started. Maybe Rodman.
Yeah, Rodman pushed
Wallace,
it, too.
You know, one of the two is when they kind of started having these rules where you're going to get suspended if you get too many of them.
Right, but this is not enough.
This is insane,
This is not enough.
You can get 16 technicals.
Boogie Cousins can get 16 in a month.
Just get 15, but just be careful on that last one.
DeMarcus Cousins has been suspended before. He can get 10 in a month.
Yeah.
I mean, it just, I don't.
Draymond Green's been suspended before.
Just crack down on it. just crack down on it. You'll get the players to shut up and quit complaining. It'll make the refs' life a little easier. Let the coaches argue all they want. Don't put any limit on the technicals the coaches want to get, because that's fine. You know, they get two, they're ejected. They get kicked out. Players get two in a game, they get kicked out. But 16 is the magical number? That means that you can get one every fifth. Listen, you can get a technical one out of every five games and only be suspended one game for doing that. Yeah. That's what that comes out to. And I think it's ridiculous. Come on, crack down on this. These players are not role models for younger people. I watch my kid watching these guys whine about every single thing. And I'm like, refs, just tee them up quicker. That's another thing. Tee them up quicker. Don't let them have all that latitude.
Yeah.
The NBA is the one that's got to come down and make it happen, and they're not going to. And then that'll eventually get the players to shut up. Now, last night, crazy thing. The Nets were in Sacramento, and the Nets were down, Dusty, by 25 going into the fourth quarter at Sacramento. They outscored the Kings 45-18 in the fourth quarter, and D'Angelo Russell, who the Lakers couldn't develop, who was outstanding talent from Ohio State, remember him, top yeah. five pick, he had 27 of his career-high 44 points in the fourth quarter. D'Angelo Russell of the Nets had 27 points in the fourth quarter. The Kings had 18. 27 is 44 in the fourth quarter. And guess what? The Nets came all the way back and won 123-121 with a bucket with 0.8 of a second remaining after being down 25 going into the fourth quarter. No lead is safe, man.
No.
No lead is safe. That's why if anybody left that game early, I think it's hilarious that they did and they missed it. Of course, they're a Kings fan. They probably didn't want to watch the ending. The NBA standings, Milwaukee's the 1, Toronto the 2, Philadelphia the 3, the Pacers the 4, the Celtics the 5, the Pistons the 6, Nets the 7, and the Heat with a losing record at 8. In the West, the Warriors have a half a game lead over the Nuggets for the number 1 seed. The Rockets are only 3.5 back in the 3 seed, but they only have 11 games left. Rockets are one of the hottest teams. Them and the Spurs are the hottest teams in basketball. Portland Trailblazers are the 4 spot. The Spurs have moved up to the 5 spot, but the Spurs are only a half a game out of being in the 8 spot. There's a half a game between the 5, 6, 7, 8 seeds. Oklahoma City, who was a 3 seed a few weeks ago, now they're all the way down to a 6. And if they end up being the 8, they would have to go to Golden State first round. Ouch. Listen, right now, I've watched the Rockets lately. You don't want any part of the Warriors or the Rockets. And right now, the Thunder would get the Rockets in the first round. The Spurs are sitting all right. Get the Trailblazers first round, then you probably get Golden State.
I'm kind of hoping
you can't avoid Golden
State. Overtake Golden State here, and Spurs can stay at 5.
Okay, and then you get the Nuggets.
Because yeah. I would feel really comfortable yeah. about making the Western Conference Finals in that scenario.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
They're going to beat Portland no matter where they're playing, like in that seven-game series.
That could be. So it's a logjam in the Western Conference, that's for sure.